to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service, the only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. This is Tiger Bales with Let's Talk.
Welcome. I'd like to acknowledge the continuing sovereignty of all First Nations peoples right across the country. Also, I'd like to acknowledge elders of the First Peoples of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you. Welcome to all our listeners tuned in across the country. I think I went there already. Might be repeating myself. This morning, two guests live in the studio. Jody Curry, Executive Officer with in the Institute for Urban Indigenous Health, and Sue Kilday, also over at IUIH. And we're today, well, welcome to the program, ladies. How are you? Jody?
Very well, thank you, Tiger. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for having me on your show again, Tiger. It's been a while, so it's nice to, be here.
It has been a little while. Tell us your mob, your country.
I'm a Yukumbeh woman. I have traditional ties across southeast Queensland. So my country goes from the Logan to the Tweed River out to McPherson Ranges. My grandmother's a Mananjali Gugujin woman, so yes, that's where I'm from. So yeah, I'm lucky to be able to live and work so close to my country, and also I'm lucky to have always had that continual knowledge of who that I am and where that I come from. So it's I'm very lucky.
Very good. Sue, so a bit about yourself.
Thanks. Good morning, and thanks for having me here. I was born and bred in Canberra. I'm a nurse and a midwife background, and I've worked with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities across many places in Australia, lots of rural and remote ones, up in Arnhem Land, over in the Kimberley, up in the Cape, and now I'm in downtown Brisbane working with the Mater Hospital and the University of Queensland in this great new program that we've got up and running.
The new program, tell us about it, Jody. What do you want Sue to tell us? It's up to you.
I guess I'll talk to Sue, but it's birthing in our communities, and I think one of the things is that there was a national plan around birthing, and the thing for us was very much within an urban setting. There's this thing, you know, about birthing on country, and the previous minister, and then talking with women and elders in the community. Sue will talk about the World Cafe we had. The thing for me about birthing on country, it's a bit of a stereotype or a bit of a something, because we all birth on country. This is Aboriginal country.
Wherever we go, it's Aboriginal land, isn't it?
That's right, you know. So this separation of, you know, that is birthing on country is some sort of, and no disrespect at all to, you know, anybody, you know, but within a mainstream construct, it's sort of like, you know, it's this traditional sort of out in the bush birthing on country type thing, you know. And if you birth at the Mar, if you birth at your, this is our country, this is Aboriginal land. So so we called it birthing in our communities, and that's the other probably really good thing about it. So I'll talk, you know, within the context of non-Indigenous children are born in our community, you know, and through birthing in communities, it's that understanding of birthing on country and birthing in a place where that there's all different type of mob who come birth, you know, whether or not you're, wherever your background is, you're birthing in our community. And so that was probably a big sort of thing for us, that the acknowledgement was, it's called birthing in our communities. It's a thing we think, well, it's a matter of fact, we all birth on country because this is our country. So that's a bit of a thing.
How long has this been an issue or concern, something like, we've got our health services set up with dental clinics and all sorts of different specialist services. The birthing, the women coming together and with concerns about birthing. Mm-hmm. How long has that been an issue?
I think we were, and Sue will talk about the Murray Mothers Clinic that was running for a 10-year period, and then there was some work up. Sue looked at some of the outcomes for women and babies. But I think it's I was blessed and lucky enough to go to Toronto late last year and see, and they're listening. Hi, Toronto. I went and saw it's the only Indigenous, it's run by First Nations people. It's a Toronto birthing centre in an urban setting. The point about us being able to birth within a setting that is appropriate to women and then culturally appropriate, I think, comes, you know, a bit after that, because I think for all women, you know, how we birth here in a hospital bed in a, and the mob from Toronto, that's what, when I was talking to them about it at the birthing centre, they were like, oh, so you're in like a hospital room, and then there'll be a shower, there'll be a bath, it might be a ball, but, you know, a birthing suite is actually a place where, you know, you can have all your family going there, you know, they can have up to 20 people. It's actually around ceremony and connectedness of little kids who are, you know, that their baby brother or sister is coming, old people. It's your, you know, it's your thing about, it could be your big niece or your big nephew coming who is your child. Then, you know, it's that cultural interconnection, interconnectedness. And I think we can't, in an urban setting or anywhere, I don't know, you know, we need to revitalise our and renew our traditional birthing practices to improve outcomes for mother and baby, and we cannot do that in a current in the current setting that we have of a hospital.
No, it's a shocking setting. I mean, I've got eight daughters. I brought her first granddaughter up as a daughter, so it's sort of nine daughters. And I was present for most of them at their birth. And I still stand today and say that the institution of health in this country, education and health, are the two most racist institutions in this country. And that all impacts, when we're talking about birthing and our mums in hospital, in these environments, it's not a good environment for them at all. It's so white.
Yes.
And they just let a couple of black fellas in and they question all these black fellas that are coming and they just got no idea. So it's really good news to hear that you guys are doing some work in this field. The natural birthing, no, natural birth is what you promote or is the ultimate method, I suppose, or the best way for young ones to be brought into the world. Sue, you're a midwife.
Absolutely, Tiger, absolutely the best way. We know that it's not possible for every single woman and that some women will need the highest level care and they might need to have, you know, medication and doctors and neonatal nurseries.
C-sections and what have you when twins are there.
All that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But we also know that that's happening for too many people. It's not the best environment to have babies. We need to actually reduce all those rates. And a natural birth is by far the best start in life for mum, for baby, for dad, for family.
And you go on from there to breastfeeding. I mean, that's the other big issue in society today is this attitude towards breastfeeding. I mean, even amongst mainstream society, I think there's more and more women out there that are starting to sort of feel okay in public and say, listen, I'm too bad.
Yeah.
It's your problem. If you've got a problem with me breastfeeding my baby in public, that's your problem. It's not mine. My baby needs a feed, so come on, get on a saucer, kid. Get on a saucer.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, breastfeeding is by far the best thing. You can never replace breast milk. It's the absolute best thing for babies. And in the program already, we're seeing our breastfeeding rates go up. We're trying. Yeah. They were sort of 71% of women were breastfeeding on discharge 2 years ago, and we're now up to 81%.
Really?
So we've got a big program of work where we're trying to really support women to be able to breastfeed and for as long as possible, at least 6 months.
And start straight up and get the colostrum that's there first up to
that first feed.
At first feed.
Yep. Yeah. The first feed should go for 1 to 2 hours, as long as possible. Mm. And if you get that first feed right, then it sets up mum and bub really well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What other stats you got? Like, where else are there improvements within our community, our mob, the way they're taken to birthing in our community?
Well, when we did the evaluation of the Murray Clinic, which is a clinic, as Jody said, has been going for about 10 years, and it's a very popular clinic with the community, and they were doing really well.
That was at Mater Hospital?
Yeah, that was at the Mater Hospital. So we did an evaluation. We looked at the data over 12 years, and one of the things we were worried about is we saw that the preterm birth rate was going up, and it was going up to around about 15 to 17%, which is really high. And across the country, nationally, it's below 10%.
Preterm birth rate. What are you saying?
Yeah, so little
babies.
They're
not going the 40 weeks. They're coming early, are they? Premature.
Absolutely. Right. So they're coming before 37 weeks.
All right.
And that's what we really want to try and avoid, because those last 3 weeks are really important for the babies. They lay down a lot more fat. They their brains are growing. It's a much better start in life if we can get those babies to be born when they're supposed to be born.
Yeah.
So that is, and we know internationally there's a lot of links with being born preterm or low birth weight with the chronic diseases in adulthood. So we decided as a program that was the one big thing we wanted to change. And for the women that are coming through our new program, the rates have dropped to 6%, which is just fabulous. And we think that's because of the fabulous care that they're getting. And because the care is now more culturally appropriate, we're working in partnership with community-controlled organisations. Women are hearing that, they're knowing that, they're seeing that, and it means that they're coming earlier for care. So they're coming in earlier, they're coming more frequently. We're doing a lot of care where we go out and see them in their homes. We've got the cultural family yarning day where once a month they all come together. So the care is now much more appropriate than what it has been in the past.
And I think the importance of the relationship between the woman and her family, and also then her midwife, that's something that within the program is unique in itself, because we're having the woman knows that she has a continuity of care of that person who is going to be there and knows that person. We're also doing within the program training for student midwives to build the capacity then of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women and communities, and to actually understand the role of the midwife in birthing and the relationship then she makes with the woman, and then ultimately then with the baby. So that's another, I think, important part, is about the role of the midwife. And it doesn't matter whether or not the midwife is a man or a female, a male or a female. I will say this about going back on that, about the appropriateness and cultural appropriateness of it. You know, I find within the mainstream construct, you know, the amount of hospitals at a higher level, the hierarchy is such a white male dominated, paradigm of thinking, and whether or not the lad is a white person or not, it's neither here nor there. You know, it's this really structuralized racist gender, you know, patriotic thing of what is our women's physiological birthing, you know. And I say all the time when I speak about birthing in communities, you know, to hear, because Sue Kilday, you know, she knows all stuff about, she's so experienced and known around the world, you know, and that I'll listen to, you know, men who are also, I'm sure, very qualified and very experienced. I don't mean to take away from that, you know, sort of try and argue a toss with Sue Kilday in relation to birthing of women, birthing of our babies. So that's why, again, birthing in our communities is such a great thing, because we have women being able to be involved in all aspects of the planning out of their pregnancy, their family being able to be involved in that, but also breaking down then the fear factor of hospital and how that we're birthing, you know. So it's been a great thing. And ultimately what we will do in Southeast Queensland is we'll have our own birthing suite that is run by community control in partnership with MATA and Queensland Health, or whoever that it is that we need to, because it will improve the outcomes for our mums and babies. You have half the population in Southeast Queensland under the age of 24. We have pockets of our community where our big populations are, Logan and Moreton, where you have half the population is under the age of 19, our population is under the age of 19. So what that is high rates of teenage pregnancy. And what we need for is that these young women can birth, that they're not, because it's scary having your first baby anytime, let alone getting to a hospital and then they say to you, you know, stuff like, the baby's blood pressure's dropped, the heart rate's changed.
Right, Tiger, stay with us.
the heart rate's changed or something, or, you know, quickly let's get a C-section happening, a cesarean, our women are birthing are so young, and we need to make sure that they have the best experts around them to actually make sure that they have a good birthing experience and that's better for them and for baby. And so we're hoping with... Sue will talk more about the stats, and I think, yeah, and Karina's going to come on and talk about her experience the outcome. So
we do have Karina on the line. Karina Hogan, welcome to the program. How are you?
Hi, Tiger. I'm good, thanks.
We'll just get some cans on, ladies. Yeah. We just got the Jody and Sue, and now Karina Hogan joining us. Is that right there, Jody? You're right?
Yep, I'm good.
Very good, very good. Karina, tell us your mob, your country.
My name's Karina. I'm Murray from up here in Queensland. I'm a Wadigo. I'm a part of the Birthing in Our Community program, and I am due to have a baby yesterday. I was due.
All right. Who's your mob, your country? Where's your country?
Bundjalung down New South Wales way.
All right.
And South Sea Island.
All right. And you've been working in this program while you're waiting to have have another baby.
Yeah, I had my first baby, Elliot, with the program 2 years ago exactly, actually. He just turned two. And it was through IUOH when I worked there that I did a bit of work with them and then fell pregnant. And I just loved it so much. It was obviously it's a really... you know, sometimes can be a difficult thing to do, having your first baby and not knowing what you're doing and having a big family and all the responsibility and all that sort of stuff. And I just really took it all in. I loved that I had my own midwife from the day that I fell pregnant to the day that I gave birth and after. And I loved it so much that an opportunity came up to do some research in that area. And then when I fell pregnant with my second baby, then I moved over to BIOC to start doing a bit of research stuff, and hopefully that'll progress when I come off maternity leave and I'll be able to do a bit of further study. So telling the stories of Indigenous women who are a part of the program and just capturing what it's like to be an Indigenous woman living in Brisbane, having a baby, and what that experience is like, and what we can do as a service to give the best possible outcomes for the babies. And I think, well, Sue would know the statistics more than I would, but the outcomes so far have been phenomenal. But I think from a personal perspective, you know, I feel like I would have been able to do it, but I probably feel like I wouldn't have been able to have this type of birthing experience had I not had the support that I had with Elliot and now with this new baby. Yeah.
So you had the support with your first baby. He must be close to 2 years old, isn't he?
Yeah, he just turned two on Sunday. And so I had my own midwife. Her name's Leanne. And from the day dot she came out to me, she... did all the checkups at home. I went into the hospital only when I needed to, and I stayed in touch with my local Aboriginal medical service down here in Woodridge, Aches. And they all worked together to give me everything that I needed. There were no gaps at all. I don't feel like I missed out on anything. And I learned so much through the whole process because I had access to my midwife 24 hours a day, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And if she was, off that day, then I would have a backup midwife who I also created a relationship. I think I had Alexis the first time around.
Mm-hmm.
And I just loved it so much that I got really involved in it. And then when the opportunity arose to do some research around it and to tell stories, because I suppose that's what I studied at uni, and that's my background. That's what I wanted sort of do. Then I just took the opportunity, and will hopefully do a master's and maybe a PhD one day in birthing and around how important it is to create the best possible start for your bub.
Mm-hmm.
I see it as really important. Why not start before baby's born, because their life
most certainly
begins before that, you know?
Well, I had a guest on yesterday, Dr. Jan Hamill, talking about FASD yesterday, the day before, you know? And how it's got to start well before baby's born. Mm-hmm. So you're right there. Now, the mainstream hospitals, the Mater, Brisbane Mothers over the north side,
yep,
they do have birthing units or birthing centres, Sue. And if you're lucky enough to score one, well and good. What's the difference? Like, is that the case? No, I'm just going on the experience of my my daughters and stuff, where they've been fortunate enough to get into birthing centres.
Yeah, they do have one at the Royal. Mm. So on the north side, they've got three rooms there at the hospital. But we don't have one on the south side.
Oh, right, okay.
So, and the key difference, I think, is really the philosophy. So it's the philosophy of normal birth. So believing that women can birth normally without intervention, giving them all the support to be able to do that as much as possible, knowing that you can always transfer to high-level care if you need to. But we've had some big studies come out across the world showing that for women that don't have risk factors, if they birth in a birth centre or if they, compared to birthing in a tertiary centre, a big hospital, their outcomes are better. So it's the best place to be if you're wanting to promote a normal birth and get the best start in life. So across Australia, we've got a lot of work to do because we don't have a lot of birth centres across Australia. And I think one of the things that is really important as we go forward is how we work with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities to make sure that any kind of birth centres, no matter where they are, out bush in remote Arnhem Land or here in downtown Brisbane, they have to be right for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, because that's got to be our priority in Australia. You know, that Close the Gap report came out recently. We're not getting anywhere near where we want to be. And that year before and the year after birth, those 2 years, I think, are the most important years for everybody in the world.
So, Jodie, it'll be fantastic to have in the community a birthing centre where there are birthing rooms, I imagine, as the Royal Mothers has. Mm. But that educational aspect of it, awareness aspect of things, to the mums, to the families, that's a big one. That's a big job.
Yeah, and I think, Tiger, once Mob Blackfellas will get it easy.
Yeah, yep.
Once you see it and you know it.
When they hear the stories and experiences of mums delivering in a community-based facility, that's unbelievable.
As I said, to see Toronto, and I can't thank those women and their board members enough, you know, for being able to see it, because as soon as we walk in there, we get it.
Yeah.
It's not something, it was like really stark for me then, the difference that we could have, you know, like it's a queen-size bed like you have at home. Yeah, you know, and they have cabinets there where that people can choose to or not to, to use actual, you know, tradition. They do smudging there and they can actually use traditional practices around their birthing at that time should they, you know, choose those things. So, and again, that's where I get the thing from. If we don't have that in a hospital setting or the opportunity to do that, and we must revitalise those traditional birth practices. It is the thing about and the Mob in Toronto were the same, you know, just because we sit in an urban setting doesn't mean that we can't then bring back those practices of birthing in our, on our country and in our community. Probably the other really important thing is the issues in relation to, you know, they talk about low birth weights and smoking rates and Aboriginal women and smoking in pregnancy is a huge issue across the whole country. And some of the, and I'll get Sue and Karina maybe to talk more about that, but some of the strategies, the innovation and strategies around that in relation to actually assisting women to, you know, stop smoking, we're having good outcomes from that. We've also just recently been supported through Minister Cameron Dick. He's the health minister here, around doing a new campaign around smoking in pregnancy. And so there's TV ads coming up with done by Wayne Blair and Sam Thaiday and some kids. But the focus on that is about our men. The new campaign is actually about our men taking responsibility as well for, you know, stopping smoking and the issues of smoking during pregnancy, and understanding, our men understanding that, you know, smoking outside is good is one thing, but actually, you know, you have to stop smoking. Mm. The issues of, you know, passive smoke, but also for women, when you're, you know, giving up, if everybody around you is smoking, how much harder that is, you know, with your triggers or whatever the things is around in relation to the addiction, but that our men actually take on and aunts and everybody else outside, you know, around the family, around the pregnant mother, take on the responsibility about not smoking, because of the, you know, the effect that it has then on the baby, and being able to have that conversation, but in a good way, in a positive way, you know, about that, that everybody is responsible in the family for the best outcome for this baby. So, and again, then the birthing suite will provide that for us. But, yeah, the smoking stuff's really interesting. Sue, you should have a yarn for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've decided that was one of the big things we wanted to tackle, because there's a pretty strong link between smoking and preterm birth, and because we want to bring that down, we had to have the conversations around smoking, and we've put it quite a bit of emphasis into training all the staff around motivational interviewing and taking a positive approach to helping women and their families give up smoking. And we've done sort of two other things I think that are important to mention. One is that we've got a new research project which is called Stop Smoking in Its Tracks, and it's sort of an incentive program to encourage women to give up smoking. So a lot of really intensive support where they we've got family support workers, so working in partnership with the organizations, we can do a program that we could never do just as the Mater Hospital. So together we've got family support workers who are employed through the institute, and they're working really closely with the midwives, and any woman that says that she wants to give up smoking and wants to have a go at it, she can come in and do this program, and she'll get, you know, visits from our family support workers twice a week. She'll get some incentives to help her, mm-hmm. encourage her to give up smoking, and taking a really positive approach to it. Mm. So not the big stick approach, yeah. But the positive approach.
Good one, yeah.
Yeah.
Katrina, you want to add anything to that?
My first pregnancy, I quit smoking, my midwife was really supportive with that, came out and gave me a lot of information around, you know, strategies to quit smoking, how to maintain that. My partner probably didn't follow suit. he still smokes, but, you know, he's very aware that he can't sort of smoke around me and all that sort of stuff, and he's careful to try and move away and do all that sort of stuff. But it was good to have the midwife, her name's Leanne, there to give me the information and to support me along the way. Mm. And I think I relapsed a couple of times the first pregnancy, but I haven't this time at all.
Good on you. You're going well.
Mm. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah,
Jack. And something else I think with birthing in our communities and the stuff again, then about building the broader, getting a evidence based around the issue of preterm birth. In our community, families, we don't really understand what that means. It can be such a regular occurrence of, you know, the baby coming at 30 weeks, the baby coming at 26 weeks. How we there, or, you know, and there's, and Sue can, you know, there's all these different things about what's preemie or what's pre, you know.
How preemie.
The understanding for our families about, you know, the impact of that, or if there's complications with the baby, through the program, and being able to understand, you know, hopefully we're, you know, that's right, we're preventing those preterm births, or, but it's that thing about understanding what happens then with that, if there's complications around that for mother or for baby. We don't understand that very well as a community and as families. And so, you know, on a long-term sort of thing, it is that stuff about, first of all, preventing preterm births as much as possible, but they do occur for, you know, whichever reasons or, you know, it happens. But really being able to support families to get through that time and understand what that they can do to support mum and baby, and yeah, it can be a very, it's such a traumatic time, and then you're trying to deal in with specialists and doctors and and all others, and that's that thing when Karina said about, you know, and even then after the birth of Elliot, then still having that relationship with your midwife, so that if there is complications with baby or any of those things, you have this person who you know who has bonded with you and baby through this process. But the preterm birth stuff, and that's right, addressing, because there's addressing smoking in pregnancy and nutrition in pregnancy, and those things will hopefully prevent some preterm births. But it is that opportunity for us to understand as a community how we do prevent that, but also then when should it happen, what does that actually mean? Because we don't have anything like that. And again, that we can't rely on the mainstream to give us that.
That's right.
We have to find that ourselves. We have
got to create it all.
Yeah, yeah. And
got to build it.
Yeah, and certainly in working in with Amada and Queensland Health in the Royal Brisbane, and there's Narramar on the north side as well, up at Caboolture and Redcliffe Hospital, they do it. They're running a similar program, and it's good. So it's building that basis, you know, and building the momentum of understanding and knowledge across the community about preventing preterm births, because it's a big issue in our community.
Certainly is. We might take a break for a song and come back and talk about the research project that you've got and the work that you're doing there, and what the expected outcomes of that may be. My guest, Jodie Currie, in the studio this morning. We've got Sue Kilday and Karina Hogan joining us. And we're talking about birthing in our communities and creating the facility, but more so creating the awareness amongst our mob, amongst our mums, and amongst those men. Men can't be left out. But it's the awareness around the health and well-being of mums and newborn babies. It's time we focus on this. They are our future, remember? My guests, Jodie Currie and Sue Kilday here. And by telephone, we have Karina Hogan joining us, who's awaiting the birth of a baby that was due yesterday.
So, yeah.
Let's hope it goes well for you, Karina.
Yeah, I think it will. I feel a lot more confident this time.
Tell me now, in this situation, I know of a few people only recently, young mums, first baby, one of them, due on like yesterday, the next day, I will have to induce you. Tell us a little about this inducing and stuff. I mean, is it best to wait a little longer? I mean, baby must come when baby wants to come, when baby has to come, surely. Sue, well, tell us. I'll just get Sue to tell us a little about this situation where these people are making these decisions about inducing within a day or so of the baby's expected arrival.
Well, there's quite a lot of international debate around this, and the due dates, the term, so if a baby's born a term, that's when you expect a baby to be born, that's anywhere from 37 weeks to 42 weeks. Some women will actually naturally go to 43 weeks. Now, we do know that the later it's left, the more likely the placenta might be struggling a bit to provide the best support to that little baby. So we do have to keep a very close eye on women when it gets, you know, 40 plus 10 days. Really need to keep a bit of an eye and monitor and make sure everything's going okay. A study came out, which I don't think it was a very good study, which sort of suggested that you might have less chance of having a cesarean section if you're induced a bit earlier. And there's also a worry about stillbirth if you leave it for too long. So you're talking to a midwife here, so I believe in natural birth as much as possible, as long as everything's going well. So I don't think we should be inducing women at the rate that we're inducing women. I think it's far too high.
What are the issues with that, with being induced?
Well, I suppose the key issue with being induced is that your body's not ready.
You're forcing.
Yeah, a lot of things happen with the body when labour's going to start. All the hormones that get going that are going to make labour work properly. So you're forcing something that's not quite ready. And that can actually be quite a long and painful process for women because the body's not ready, so they need quite a lot of drugs to try and get them to be ready. And that can be more painful, so then they need to have more intervention. And we call it the cascade of intervention. So you start with an induction, but then, of course, you might need an epidural, and then the baby doesn't turn the way you want it to, so you might end up having to have a cesarean section, which might mean that the baby might not breastfeed as well as it could have because you're in pain and bubby's, you know...
Stressed.
So it's that cascade of intervention that we want to try and prevent. I'm not saying that inductions aren't right for some people, but I think far too many are happening in Australia today, around the world, in some countries.
Well, C-section, I mean, back in the 20s, 30s and maybe a bit earlier and a bit later, it was a common practice in country hospitals, well, 50s and 60s even, from my memory, where doctors in country hospitals, Aboriginal women, were given C-sections on their firstborn. And this was a strategy to try to reduce the number of births that can be, that this mum. I mean, that sort of stuff, that's part of the thinking of the, that was part of the thinking of society in this country. That, a strange one. You're aware of that? You know, that you heard any of those stories?
I've heard stories similar to that, yeah. Yeah, I think the World Health Organization came out last year again and said that any country that's got a cesarean section rate above 15%, and ours is above 30% in Australia, it's gone up every year for more than 10 years, any country that's above 15% this is a problem. It's more likely to be causing harm than good. So, of course, some women have to have a cesarean section, but too many women, almost double the number in Australia, are having a cesarean section. So that's a really big problem for us. We've got to try and reduce it.
So what's the issue here? People, parents, mums, expectant mums, need to make themselves aware of these things or do a little bit of research, do a little bit of homework, get a second opinion. That doesn't cost anything right from the start, generally. Get a second opinion. Go home and tell partner was there with you, you know, we're talking about a C-section here, we'd better go and get a second opinion. That's one of the big things, isn't it? Just that awareness amongst
people. Yeah, I think it is. I think it's the awareness of knowing that there may be other ways.
Yes.
It may not be essential that it happens today. Knowing the risks and having that conversation so that you can actually judge the risks yourself and how it's going to affect you as an individual person. So how it's going to affect you and your family, having those conversations, being more aware, jumping on the internet. There's a lot of information on the internet these days. Going and talking to a midwife.
Yeah.
Some of the things that you can do to try and find out more information about. Birth is such an important thing, and the first birth in particular is the most important. When the first birth goes well for mum and bub, many of those other births are going to go well, aren't they, down the track? So that's absolutely where we've got to concentrate on the young mums having, or they might not all be young, but they're just having their first baby.
Yeah, and I think the really important thing as well is about, when I think about inductions or the thing of cesarean rates and other things, and BIOC actually, and what is the numbers around that, Sue? Because the BIOC numbers are lower in relation to cesareans. And again, then this is the way that the model works and the care that is provided.
What is BIOC?
Birthing in our communities.
Oh, right, sorry.
That's a short one.
Birthing in our communities, right, yeah.
Yeah, it. We've got in birthing in our community, we're trying really hard to increase the normal birth rates and reduce the cesarean section rates. So with the national average, it's around 32% of women will have a cesarean section. the Indigenous women at the MARTA is around 27%, but the women that are coming through our program, it's only 17%. Mm-hmm. So I think we're doing a really good job there of actually getting that's down around what World Health Organization say it should be. So that's we've done that in just over 2 years, and we're really happy with that.
Yeah. Okay.
So what we want to do now is increase the size of the program,
yes,
and so that all women that are coming to have a baby at the MARTA can come through this program.
All right.
Well, it's that thing then about...
What was that, Jody? Karina? Sorry?
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, because I don't come from a health background or a midwifery background, so I never knew anything about birthing. So the first time that I fell pregnant with Elliot, it's really, really easy to get scared and to get really fearful about birthing because there's such... there's so much talk about how things can go wrong and, you know, you need to have this in place, you need to have that in place. When in actual fact, when I spoke to my midwife who gave me a whole array of information and I really delved into it and looked into it, the fact of the matter is that we our bodies as women are made to give birth. That's what they're made to do. And I think throughout that time of having that interaction with Leanne and actually Sue ended up delivering Elliot, but and will deliver my next baby, hopefully. but with that interaction, they made me feel or they make me feel like I'm empowered enough to be able to do what my body is made to do, and that's to give birth. So I think having access to that, not all women have access to that, so it's really easy to get scared and to get caught up in this notion of I've got to do that. Just I need to have a doctor there just in case, and I need to put this precaution in place just in case. When in actual fact, we can do it.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, as women, that's what our bodies are made to do.
Well, go back a little way. Our women were going off and doing it without the man around. Couple of women around, they're out in the bush, there's not a hospital around. Well, before hospitals were even built here. I mean, you're right, Karina. You're born, created to deliver babies, to have babies, you know, procreation.
And I just have to say, Karina, I didn't deliver your baby. You birthed your baby yourself.
Yeah. You were just keeping an eye on
things. I was there keeping an eye on things, but I had nothing to do with it. You did a brilliant job, and you'll do a brilliant job this time too.
I think it's also then, you know, as it's our responsibility as Indigenous people and Indigenous women, that we don't No, this connection to country, this connection to family, the connection to the old people who send you back here, we don't really fully understand what that is. Mm. And we've been put into this mainstream model, a clinical model of birthing that is risk averse around all these things of, you know, what could or couldn't happen and that are very, very expensive to the taxpayer, to the government, but, you know, that's a, yeah. But there is this thing that I believe as an Aboriginal woman, and I think then if women, any woman who is pregnant or, you know, or sees their sister or you know, whoever it is, sees a woman who is pregnant or been a part of a birth, is there is something about our intrinsic humanistic being and how we connect with our, whether or not it's our, you want to call it our DNA, our synapses forming, about actually where we come from. This is the beginning of where that we are. And again, it's this thing, it's our responsibility of as Indigenous women and Indigenous communities to, again, revitalise that notion of that this isn't just a thing of a clinical thing of cutting the cord and here's your bundle of joy. It's actually a humanistic connection to country, to land, to each other, to your old people, you know, your DNA that you carry from 60,000 years, or, you know, I don't know how long they say that we've been humans for, but, you know, it's something that we have carried. It's that intergenerational of tens of thousands of years that is present at every birth. And so how we actually, and we shouldn't be thinking that mainstream because they can't articulate what that is, and they try and do this thing about, you know, they'll do research about face recognition and the first one they see and skin-on-skin contact and, you know, you must hold the baby first and that's important and, you know, we know that. And it is that thing then about getting back to what that our practices that are intrinsically a humanistic thing of birthing, and that it's a ceremony, and that it's a it's the start of your it's your first ceremony that you attend, and you know, and it should be something that we understand in a way that is cultural and connected to our old people and our country. So,
And we can learn a lot from Canada. I mean, the First Nation people over there, in one of their very remote communities up in, you know, I think it was initially an eight-hour flight away from a caesarean section, they decided to take birth back. And instead of sending women out of their remote communities, they decided to set up a birthing centre in this remote community. They've been going now since 1985. They've got amazing outcomes. The communities around them have said, "Okay, we want to do this too." So we're seeing them pop up and open in very remote communities across some parts of Canada. And I spent a lot of time up in Manangreta in Arnhem Land, and my mentor up there was an older woman who's passed away now, but she fought and we fought for a very long time to try and get birthing back to Manangreta, and we haven't given up that fight because I think that's the birthing on country, isn't it? It's, if we want to make a difference, we have to actually really, in Australia, we've got to take this seriously and get birth back to the people and back to the ground.
So, Jody, how long do you think it might be before we see something in a physical sense in the community that maybe that would be the birthing centre, a birthing place for our mums, families?
Oh, goodness me. Yeah, I would like to think Tiger within 12 months.
All right.
I really, you know, as I said, the experience of it, and Brisbane Aches is a partner within the project, and the board of Brisbane Aches is certainly very committed to the notion of having our own birthing suite, and it is based upon the relationship that we have with the Queensland government and with the MARTA and with the Institute for Urban Indigenous Health, so that the oldest and largest Aboriginal medical service in the state actually wants to, you know, is committed to, as a part of a strategic direction, to have a birthing centre. I think it's doable within a 12-month period. I really do, you know. So that's, yeah, we should be able to do that.
Tell us quickly about, you've got a research project. It's quite a big project, 5 years, which is fantastic. 5 years?
Yeah, it is.
What's the plans there with this research project?
Okay, so when we set up the partnership, we said, look, we should we know what works in other settings, but we need to actually put a bit of a research framework around what we're doing here so that we can learn from it and so that we can tell others. And also, you know, not wait for the end of 5 years to say, oh, that didn't work, but we're doing what's called action research. So plan, act, reflect the whole time. So we're planning what we're doing. If it doesn't work very well, we've learned a lot in the last 2 years. We've tweaked the model a bit. We're reflecting. We'll keep an eye on the clinical outcomes. We're looking at them every 6 months to make sure we're on track. But it's also, we've now started the research where we're talking to the women. We've got questionnaires at when they book into the program, at 36 weeks before they have their babies. Hope you've done yours, Karina. at 8 weeks, 2 months after they've had a baby, and 6 months after they've had a baby. So we want feedback from the community and the women. We want to know what their experiences are. We're going to do a program of work around Tell My Story, and Karina spoke about that earlier, where we can actually learn and make sure that we're getting it right. So they're the main things that we're doing with the research, but there's quite a lot inside there. We've got 5 years funding, so we're pretty happy with that.
Fantastic.
The National Health and Medical Research Council.
And this is a partnership?
It's still the partnership, so that's the three organisations, and University of Queensland, of course, which is where I'm one of the organisations I'm based at, but it's with the Institute of Urban Indigenous Health, and it's with AICS, and it's with the MARTA too.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also, because we wanted to compare our model to another model, and we wanted to compare it to standard care, so we were originally going to compare it to the north side, But what happened at the north side is they've got up Narramar up and running as well, which is a model that's, you know, a bit different to ours. So what we're going to do is we're going to evaluate both models and compare them to each other and compare them to baseline so that we can, at the end of the day, we've got a costing around it. We'll be able to say, okay, these are the key ingredients of this model and this is how that worked. The key ingredients of that model, that's how this worked. This is how much they both cost. This is what women thought. This is what their families thought. This is, you know, we can, certainly working with the Institute, they've got a big footprint across southeast Queensland. We can roll things out as we go.
Anything that works in mainstream that you're adopting or bringing across and building on what works?
Absolutely. So the midwifery group practice model where women have a midwife 24/7, we've tested that recently in two big randomised control trials in Australia, one for low-risk women and one for women who had more complex needs, and found fantastic results. And we know that internationally there's you can get a reduction in preterm birth by 16% if in these models. So that's the first thing that we put, the first ingredient we put in because we're...
Sort of, right.
But we know we also needed the cultural workers, so we needed to work with the Aboriginal maternal infant healthcare workers, and we want a capacity build. So we've got we're putting in the student midwives to build the Indigenous midwives for the future.
Mm. Good one. What about the end of time? It's great to have you ladies in. And Karina, thank you for joining us and giving us making your contribution there.
Thanks, Tiger.
And wish you well with your birth.
Thank you.
Let's hope it all goes well. I'm sure it will.
Yeah.
Yes, just like Danielle. Sure. You've had one good one, you've got another
I'll
one
let
coming.
You know.
All right, good
I'll
luck.
Text you. All right,
good
thank
luck.
You.
Thank you, bye-bye. Jodie and Sue, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Great to have you in.
It was great. Thanks, Tony.
Yeah, good luck with this. It's certainly something that we need to talk more of, and particularly in spreading that awareness, letting the community know this is what we're doing, this is what's happening, get ready for it. If you're planning to have a baby, we'll plan for on birthing on country. Plan that one. All right, Jodie.
Have a great day.
Sue,
thanks, Tiger.
Thank you
thanks
both very much.
Thank you.